Verse 27 is provoked when Jesus has spoken that rich men can hardly enter into the kingdom of heaven. And then Peter answered and said unto him, "Behold, we have forsaken all and followed you. What shall we get out of it?" All right. What shall we have therefore? Jesus said unto them, "Verily I say unto you, that you who have followed me in the rebirth of all creation, when the Son of Man shall sit in the throne of his glory, you also shall sit upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. And everyone that hath forsaken houses, or brethren, or sisters, or father, or mother, or wife, or children, or lands, for my name's sake, shall receive 100-fold, and shall inherit everlasting life." In another gospel it says, "with persecutions also." All right. "But many that are first shall be last, and the last shall be first. For the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is a householder, who went out early in the morning to hire labourers into his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the labourers for a penny a day," this may bring you into mind of our present rate of wages, all right, but "a penny a day, he sent them to his vineyard, and he went out about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace, and said to them, 'Go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right I will give you.' And they went their way. Again he went out about the sixth and the ninth hour and did likewise. And about the 11th hour he went out and found others standing idle, and said to them, 'Why stand you here all the day idle?' They say unto him, 'Because no man has hired us.' He saith unto them, 'Go ye also into,'" you almost feel like saying "into all the world," "into the vineyard. And whatsoever is right, that shall you receive. So when even was come, the Lord of the vineyard saith unto his steward, 'Call the labourers, and give them their hire, beginning from the last to the first. And when they came that were hired about the 11th hour, they received every man a penny.'" Now, we say a penny, but you know, you put there a day's wages. In chapter 18, we had that calculation of 100 pennies being £2,000. That's on the basis of a day's wage being £20, which isn't very much, is it? So we could say £20, if you like. You can say anything, because it's difficult to measure a day's wage in a third world culture, which is what we have. It could be anything from a pound to £20. But anyway, comparing it with our culture, it would be about £20. They received every man £20, a penny. "But when the first came, they supposed that they should have received more. And they likewise received every man a penny. When they'd received it, they murmured against the goodman of the house, saying, 'These last have wrought but 1 hour, and thou hast made them equal to us, who have borne the burden and heat of the day.' But he answered one of them and said, 'Friend, I do thee no wrong. Did not you agree with me for a penny? Take that thine is, and go thy way. I will to give to this last even as unto thee. Is it not lawful for me to do what I will with mine own? Is your eye evil because I am good?' So the last shall be first, and the first last. For many be called, but few are choice." Or chosen. Jesus, going up to Jerusalem, took the 12 disciples apart in the way and said to them, "Behold, we go up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man shall be betrayed unto the chief priests and to the scribes, and they shall condemn him to death, and shall deliver him to the Gentiles to mock, to scourge, and crucify him." He seemed to know, well, he did know, not just the crucifixion, but about the mockery and the whipping. Of course, it was all prophesied in the Old Testament, anyway. "And the third day he shall rise again." Then came to him the mother of Zebedee's children with her sons, worshipping him and desiring a certain thing of him. And he said to her, "What do you want?" She said unto him, "Grant that these my two sons may sit, the one on thy right hand, the other on the left, in thy kingdom." But Jesus answered and said, "You know not what you ask. Are you able to drink of the cup that I shall drink of, or be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" They say unto him, "We are able." He said unto them, "You shall indeed drink of my cup, and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with. But to sit on my right hand and on my left is not mine to give, but it shall be given to them for whom it is prepared of my Father." When the 10 heard it, they were moved with indignation against the two brethren. But Jesus called them to him and said, "You know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they are that are great exercise authority upon them. But it shall not be so among you, but whoever shall be great among you, let him be your minister. And whoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant. Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered to, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many." And as they departed from thence, from Jericho, a great multitude followed him. And behold, two blind men, sitting by the wayside, when they heard that Jesus passed by, cried out, saying, "Have mercy on us, O Lord, thou Son of David." And the multitude rebuked them because they should hold their peace. But they cried the more, saying, "Have mercy on us, O Lord, thou Son of David." And Jesus stood still and called them and said, "What will you that I should do unto you?" They say unto him, "Lord, that our eyes may be opened." So Jesus had compassion on them and touched their eyes, and immediately their eyes received sight, and they followed him. All right, that's the chapter. Now, as I said, this first parable is an answer to the question that Peter asked in verse 27. What will we get out of following you? What will I get out of it? What's in it for me? I want to be sure. Jesus gives this answer, that you who have followed me in the regeneration, that's what the word actually means, regeneration, which is the word new birth, it is that same word, regeneration, that is used concerning new birth, say in Titus chapter 3, verse 5. The regeneration. When the Son of Man shall sit in the throne of his glory. And he's not here referring only to the individual rebirth. In rebirth, in that which regenerates a human personality, people do sit with the Son of Man in his throne. There's a partaking of it. But here he's referring to a much greater event that is to come. Because the new creation is to be created for new people, if I can put it that way. In other words, the new creation started when he worked on the cross. In other words, when he made the first creation, he made the heavens and the earth. And then he made the plants and so on and everything. And on the sixth day, he made the animals, and then he made man, finally. But in the new creation, He makes man first. All right? In the new creation, he's making us now. What God is doing in this generation, or I'm talking about the generation since Jesus Christ, this time, this span, this age, this is the age of the gospel. And in it, God is preparing a people in this age who will be the inhabitants of the new creation in the ages to come. All right? So in the regeneration, I have used a phrase, in the rebirth of all things, or rebirth of all creation, referring to their rebirth and including in it the rebirth of the heavens and the earth, so that everything will be regenerate. You know that there's going to be a day when everything is going to be regenerate, every single thing. There'll be nothing of the old left. It will all have gone and passed away. And in that day, he said, everyone who is forsaken, he said, you also shall sit upon 12 thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. Interesting this, isn't it? This point of judgment that we have in the judgment. It speaks to them that they will be in it, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. I have no light to give to you on that, except to take it literally. All right? If I had something, I would. But I'm not going to invent something. All right. And then he promises them, everyone who hath forsaken houses or brethren or sisters or father. You see, you may give up these. It says in the other Gospels, it says, for my name's sake or for the gospel's sake, houses, brothers, sisters, father or mother or wife or children or lands. Now, I don't know how many of those I've given up. I've never owned a house, so I can't really have given up a house. But in the work of the gospel, at different times, you find that you do have to give up your home. I had to choose between my father and the gospel, and my mother and the gospel. We've had to do it since in different ways. I've left my wife for short periods, for the gospel's sake. You may say for long periods, but and my children. I'm not saying I'm a particularly sacrificial person. I haven't left them for great long periods like C.T. Studd left his wife for years. And then when she went to visit him in Africa, I think she saw him for about 2 weeks and then left him. I never saw him again. All right. Amazing, isn't it? Of course, every marriage is different, but one of the things about marriage is that you must never plan to build your marriage on an ideal. For example, some have an ideal of a romantic, lovely couple, always strolling along the beach and staring with violins playing. And all these lovely things, like Vicky and me, you see. good job Vicky isn't here. I might get a shoe on the back of my head, doesn't it? But, but the point is that, you understand, some people think, oh, that's how I want to be. But the point is, every marriage is different. Some are, I wouldn't say marriages of convenience, but they are marriages which are more to do with working partnerships. There are others that are very close, with close emotional bonding, and so on. And God has put people together in his wisdom. And if somebody has a very practical attitude to marriage, so be it. People don't have to follow a certain norm. And one of the problems of reading books on marriage is that they actually tend to try and model people on the couple who's writing the book. It's all very good, but you must take from it tips, but don't try and model yourself on somebody else. But it's like, for example, Norman Meaton. You could try and model yourself on him, who spent 9 months out of the country Yes, and he's married, you know. These are it's a very, very big thing. And you have to be called of God and know it's you and your wife are made to bear that. No man must be idealistic in it. And we're all responsible to make it all work. But anyway, he says that you can leave. People do leave. Obviously, he's not referring to permanently. He's referring to the sacrificial giving up of time. I know people who've given themselves to the gospel who haven't travelled so much, but in the way they live at home, they have given themselves so entirely to the ministry of prayer, they've had to give each other up. It isn't a question of travelling to India. And again, I'm not trying to make you follow an ideal, I'm just telling you facts. I know a couple like that. But anyway, you give up these things, children, lands, for my name's sake, you'll receive 100-fold back. God will give you spiritual fruit. It's wonderful, isn't it, that you'll have people whose lives you will touch by giving yourself up to Him. That will be your reward. That is your reward. The people you touch. I remember one lady whose life was, I would say, utterly miserable. She was going to die. I'm convinced that she would only have lived a few months after I met her in Cameroon. And I remember the day she said to me, "If you'd only come to Cameroon for me, I praise God." And it does something for you when someone says that. I'm not saying that bolstering my ego or anything, but it was just to realise the reward. Somebody like that. One. Two. How many? 100-fold, he said. You notice in the list he gives that the greatest barrier between you and God's will is your affections. Notice? You love your wife. So you build your life around that. Very nice. Not to do with travelling to India. I'm not talking about that. Talk about the way you live at home. All right, this is what they had to learn to do. And he says, well, you've given them up. You've forsaken that dominant affection. And you'll receive 100-fold. Now, he goes on then to say, give the parable in chapter 20. We're in chapter 20, by the way. We've only just got to there, but we're in chapter 20. The parable in chapter 20 is on the basis, because it begins with this little word, for the kingdom of heaven is like. And then he goes on to describe the... And what he's really describing is, you see, what Peter said, what am I going to get out of this? What am I going to get out of serving God? And he makes a big mistake there. And so Jesus gives him this to point out the error that servants of the Lord fall into. And so here is the kingdom of heaven is like to a man that is a householder. He goes out early to hire labourers. This is what God wants. Workers. Labourers. It's hard sweat. It's hard graft, we'd say, isn't it? It's hard work in the kingdom of God. Sometimes I wonder whether prayer isn't very, very hard work. I'm not saying that you feel exhausted all the time you're doing it, but it does actually take up your concentration. It isn't a casual work. You're giving yourself to prayer. And so on. But anyway, hard work. They made prayer where prayer was wont to be made. You make prayer as you fashion something in a workshop. You understand? You make prayer. You fashion it. Where do you fashion it? On the anvil of your heart. It's heated with desire. And as everything that's beat on the anvil, it's dipped in tears to shape. All right, you make prayer. You make the work of the Lord. It's interesting here too that when you're sent out, you do go and do the work that God sends you to. But you notice another thing here, that the work is where he sent you. You're already there. Now you've got to make the work where you are. What I mean is, for example, D.L. Moody went to a church. This was when he was in Chicago. He went to a church when he was a very young man. And he said, "Can I be a Sunday school teacher?" And they said, "No. We've got enough Sunday school teachers. We don't need one." And so what he did was, he went out and he gathered all the children he could together and he started a Sunday school. You understand? You want a job? There isn't one for you. Go and make one. It's no coincidence that that man became one of America's greatest evangelists. It's something about this, because this going into the vineyard is part of his great heart. Sometimes we think that if God would bless me, then I'd serve him. It's when you've seen Christ and you want to serve him that God blesses you. It's a strange thing, but Jesus said, "You shall be witnesses to me. The Spirit of power shall come upon you. You shall be witnesses to me in Jerusalem, in Judea, in Samaria, and unto the uttermost parts of the earth." And it seems as if the Spirit was given for service. We know it wasn't given for service, or he wasn't given for service. But in another sense, he was. And if a person won't serve God, they're wasting their time asking for the Holy Spirit. There's something about a heart that wants to receive the Spirit that wants to serve God. In one sense, he is given for service. And you find this truth here when he agrees with the labourers for a penny a day, which is a wage. It's virtually a labourer's wage. We could say £3.40 an hour is about the average nowadays. If you go past these employment agencies for a labouring kind of job, £3.40 an hour, something like that. Not a stunning executive position with all the perks. But here it is. So he goes there early. Then about the third hour, that's 9 o'clock in the morning. Then 12 o'clock midday, that's the sixth hour. The ninth hour, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The 11th hour, 5 o'clock in the evening. Sunset's coming soon. The light's going to go where no man can work. And he said this a number of times. You find it in verse 4, "Go ye." Then you find in verse 7, "Go ye also into the vineyard." Go ye, go ye, go ye. There's something in the heart of God that says go. You know, he says come. We've already had the word come. Come. Here he's saying go, go, go. You go also. Something that begins to burn in that. You go. You know, I've noticed that the people who get involved in some form of evangelism, I'm not saying permanently, but do something, like young people mainly, say have a holiday, and they go and get involved in some evangelistic outreach, something happens in them. Something happens. I remember a young man doing that from Manchester. He went with Dave Orange, a young man. I've been writing to him ever since. We write regularly. Got a letter this week from him. He's doing his A-levels now. And we correspond about every 3 months. We write letters to each other. And now, he went with Dave Orange last year to somewhere. I think it was Poland. And he came back and he was on our men's weekend in Kinmore Hall. And we had question and answer sessions, and every question was this: how can we reach the world for Christ? And then another question: but how can we reach the world for Christ? How can we reach the world for Christ? Something in that, in his heart. Anyway, then they were all working on. Then the 11th hour, they've all been labouring, and the others have seen, oh, he's joined us. And what you have is this tragic end to the story, when the older workers are a bit long in the tooth. they're a bit sort of wise now. We've been here, we've borne the burden. They're sort of wise now. We've borne the burden and heat of the day. And the others come along, and they've got this sort of feeling that they deserve more than these junior ones. And then Jesus comes and gives them the same reward. You get the same reward. Everybody gets the same reward. What am I going to get out of it, Lord? The same as everybody. What do you want? Do you want lands? Do you want a great big thing with a swimming pool or something? Of course not. But do you want some distinction? But I preached so much, Lord. So what? You only did what I told you to. But that person didn't preach. Oh, they did what I told them to. You understand? There's no distinction. I will not get a better reward for standing here teaching you. I only get a reward for doing what I'm told. It's the same for all of us. No length of service medals. Long service. What's the reward? I do it for you, Lord. What's the tragedy when you lose that and you become a hired servant? You remember in the parable of the prodigal son, the tragedy, the great tragedy of the story is the hired servant mentality. You find it, you see, the prodigal son came back, and he had it in the sense that he said, I'm not worthy to be your son, and I take me as one of your hired servants. I'll just be happy to be somewhere as a hired servant. Just let me be a hired servant somewhere. And they said, no, you're my son. You're my son. But the other son, who'd been with him all the time, never ceased to be his son. He was out in the fields, came back late, been working really hard. And as he approached the house, he communed with the hired servants, not with the son. His mind went to the reward, to the hired servants. He went to commune with them, and he talked. He said, what's happening? As if he should have known it was his father's house. And he said, well, your brother's come back. And he goes to his father. He said, I've worked for you all these years. You never did anything for me. What has God ever done for me? Nothing ever special. That's what he said. He's been an unjust master to me. What? Nothing special. I never did this, and I never was. And what you get is this, I suppose it's a hardening, it's an arrogance. Those who've been longer in the way, who don't keep the spirit of a son. You see, a son has everything. A son works hard, but doesn't get any wages. Because he's just fed. He eats at Father's table. It's the hired servants who get wages. You're part of family. I give my children pocket money, some vast sum, and I invent punishments to take it off them. cruel father. Anyway, you know, you've got all these, you give them, but you don't sort of give them wages. You understand, you've got a family. It's the family of God. The reward is to be a son. Anyway, we've really brought that out, I think. And that's it. What are we going to get out of it? Oh, do you really want reward? All right, now let's go on. And verse 17, Jesus took them. Let me just finish verse 14. I will to give to this last even as unto thee. He wants to give everyone the same reward. It's wonderful, isn't it? Some people only serve him for a day, then they die. And they get the same reward. It's beautiful, isn't it? Right, verse 17. Jesus going up to Jerusalem took the 12 disciples apart and he told them. And as I said, he went into the detail of what would happen. That he'd be mocked, scourged and crucified. All those three things happened to him. And then you have immediately a conflict arising. Now, here it's put in a certain detail. It's put into other detail in other Gospels. But the conflict was basically about who should be the greatest. Now, I want you to notice this because it's in the context of a succession to Jesus Christ. Because Jesus Christ is about to go. And it says in the other Gospels there was a conflict as to who should be greatest. Here it puts in this context of the mother bringing her two sons. Here's the problem. Here's mother ambitious for her sons. I want my sons to succeed. It's the ambition of every mother. And fathers too. Let's not make it entirely a mother's thing. Every father wants his sons to succeed. And his daughters. You also have it in the context of wives who want their husbands to succeed. You sometimes find a wife who is desperately ambitious for her husband. But anyway, the problem of succession. Who's going to take over after Jesus Christ has died? Because he said he'd die. He also said he'd rise again, but the rising from the dead never struck a chord with them. They never took that into account. They must have thought it meant at the end of the age. So they, verse 21, grant that these two, my two sons may sit, one on thy right hand and the other in thy left, in thy kingdom. She wanted these two, James and John, to be... Do you want a cup of water? Are you okay? She wanted them to be the chief people in his kingdom. She wanted to look, sit down there somewhere in the crowd and say, that's my boy. That's my boy up there. It's my boy. And it probably to somebody should have said, I put in a good word for him. I remember when I left a job because of conscience, I was working on some armaments thing. I'm sure I've told you this before, but one of the greatest heartaches for me was I was staying at home with my parents. I was living at home with my parents. My father said, if you leave that job, you have to leave home. My mother went down on her knees and wept before me and said, you'll break my heart. She worked in a factory. My mother worked in a factory. My mother had a number of jobs. One of her jobs was in a factory. She had it for a long time, sewing. She had been doing it till recently, actually, but... And then the lady who worked on the sewing machine next to her was the mother of the secretary in my office. And my father worked on a council. He was had a certain job in the council. And in the council, they knew about this factory and they knew that his boy had become, because it's one of the star factories in the area, and his boy had got promoted to this good job. And then, so it was the humiliation now that when I left this job, the woman at work would say, oh, your son. And the friends at work with my father, your boy, we've heard all about it. They actually mentioned it at the council, you see, in the council meetings, because it was my father's boy who'd done it, you see. And it was the agony of what it did to them. You understand? This boy who succeeded, their success story, had blown it all because he had a tender conscience. See, she wanted something for her boys. And Jesus, this is all out of context. This is not like that. This isn't a kingdom that works like that. Now let's look how the kingdom works. So you don't know what you're asking. Who will sit at the right hand of Jesus Christ? Well, there's one thing I'm absolutely certain of. It won't be me. I know that. It won't be me. If it is, it will be in the context of, well, come on, let's give him a lot of love. He needs it. Who will it be? Maybe Richard Wurmbrand, who lost his entire family, all his parents and uncles in one day, or lost his children in one single day, all his children. 14 years in a communist prison for a testimony, and came out with a sweet spirit. Would you give it to him? I think so. He'd be my, if I had to vote in it, I think I'd vote him in. I don't know, but I just know it won't be me. It's not a reward for preaching, I'm absolutely certain of that. It may be a reward for offering up of one's life in love for others. But here's Jesus. You don't know what you're asking. Are you able to drink of the cup that I shall drink of? And be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with. They say unto him, yes, we are. We can do it. We're able. We're your men. Oh, I can almost hear this. Not a heavy heart, but a, well, you shall drink indeed of my cup. And be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with. Of course, he's referring to his cross. He had a baptism to be baptized with. He was going to be baptized into that terrible place. He was going to drink of a cup of suffering for their sakes. And when they drank it, and when you drink it, and I'm baptized into it, it isn't the same for you and me. Of course, it is the same in this respect. You have to lose your life to go into it. It isn't a place that you can say, I've been there. You may have been, but you may not realize where you've been. They didn't know what they were asking. I would suggest to you, you don't know where you've been. If you're baptized with the Spirit, you don't know what you are. I don't, not fully. The life of learning is a discovery of what God's done in us. It's always greater. You don't know what you're asking. You don't know what God's done in you. To this day, not a single person in this room knows what God's done for them. You don't know. All you know is it's been wonderful. All God's trying to do is open your eyes to be grateful for it. If you'd be grateful, your eyes would be open more. They would. But anyway, that's what he said to them. That baptism of the cross. And to sit on my right hand and my left is not mine to give. It shall be given to them for whom it is prepared of my Father. Somebody who loved their life, not their life unto death. Somebody who stood out and loved Christ when everybody else denied him. Somebody who prayed on when the prayer meetings dwindled. Somebody who kept their light bright when everybody else faded. You realize that days vary. Your testimony may move with the moving of the testimony of others, may go up or down. But those who go through with God and stand in every situation, in every kind of thing. This is what God's calling for. People who will stand with Christ. You are they who have continued with me through my temptations, in my temptations, and I appoint to you a kingdom. You stayed with me. They were the only 12, well, 11. You stayed with me. That's all they'd done. You've continued with me. You didn't turn your back on me. You didn't give me a mouthful of abuse. You didn't distrust me and disbelieve me for half an hour while you wondered. You didn't go away and spend 3 months sulking and call it prayerful seeking. You stuck it out with me. You put your face to the storm and let it beat across your face. You continued with me. If you follow Christ, a storm will come against you at some point. Shall I make that a promise? No, but you understand that you can't escape the things that are going on. You can't escape it. The cold, chill blasts that move across lives. You can't be exempt. But in the end, you're going to say, Lord, I'm going to stay with you. And not mine to give. It's prepared, whom is prepared of my Father, he'll give it to them. Who will have it? John Wesley was asked, will you see George Whitefield? Are you expecting to see George Whitefield in heaven? He said, no, I'm not expecting to see George Whitefield. They were arch enemies, by the way. One was a Calvinist, one was an Arminian. And they had a bit of a conflict and they had a bit of a thing. And they said, would you expect to see George Whitefield in heaven? He says, no, I don't. He'll be far too close to the throne. And I'll be far too far back. I'll never see him in the crowds that separate us. He'll be far too close to God. All right. When the 10 heard it, they said, oh, they didn't shake their hands, oh, they don't understand yet. They didn't shake their hands, oh, they're not coming to the revelation that we've got yet. They were indignant. They said, what? They're getting their word in first. You see, if you can maneuver into position, you can maneuver things right, when they need someone important, you'll be there. Ruin the church, won't it? When the 10 heard it, they were moved with indignation against the two brethren. And Jesus, oh, no. A big argument about to burst out. Churches divide over this. Men who are Christians call each other names over this. You know, sometimes people say, oh, it's a doctrine. But it isn't always a doctrine. It's an ambition. It's slighted ambition. Slighted ambition is like a bear robbed of her whelps. Anyway, he says, well, you know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them. They that are great exercise authority upon them. It won't be so. It shall not be so among you. Whoever will be greatest among you, let him be your servant, your minister. Who will be chief among you, let him be your servant. I didn't look up that word. It may mean slave. Does anybody have the Greek there? The margin? Slave, verse 27? No, well, anyway, it doesn't matter. The Son of Man did not come to be ministered unto, but to minister. Is it doulos? Bondservant, that's it, doulos. Yeah, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many. Here it is, a slave. Well, what does a slave do? A slave doesn't decide what he eats. He doesn't decide what he wears. He doesn't decide what time he gets up. He doesn't decide what time he goes to bed. He doesn't get any wages. Everything is taken care of. You know that we say slavery was bad, and we're glad it was abolished. You know, it wasn't all bad. That's why it isn't condemned in the New Testament. To be the slave of a good master was wonderful, especially in a hostile age. If you lived in a country where you didn't know what was going to happen, you could be sacked, you see. You could lose your job in one country. And it was slavery by low wages, if you like. But if you were the slave of a good master, he'd look after you. You'd never worry for anything. You'd never think about anything. He'd look after you. Of course, if you had a bad master, it'd be horrible. But this is the thing, you see, when they had a good master, it was wonderful. But you look at the people in Britain who were not slaves at the time of the liberation. There were people in Britain who were worse off than slaves. Crawling up chimneys for farthings. Dying up there and so on. Anyway. Read your Dickens. There we go. Christ came not to be ministered to, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many. And here's the picture of heaven. Catch the picture now. Here's heaven. Who's in the centre of heaven? God, the Father. Who's ministering to him? Everybody's ministering to him. You understand? Worshipping him. Who's most important? The Father. But who's looking after everybody? The Father. Who's looking after everybody? Who's got the touch to reach every life? The Father. He receives worship, but he serves everybody. Who's the centre of heaven's attention? Father. Who's the centre of heaven's love? You. You understand? God's never going to make you the centre of attention. But he's going to wrap you up in his love. It's paradoxical, isn't it? That all heaven's love will come and wrap you up. And release you. It'll descend in a fiery stream called the Holy Spirit. It'll turn you upside down, cleanse your heart, revolutionize your mind. It'll make you feel as if everybody's looking at you in heaven, and in one sense they are. They're all rejoicing of what God's doing. And when you've been washed and cleansed and it's all overflowed in you, what will happen? What will be left will be a servant, a slave to do his will. It's wonderful, isn't it? Heaven's Spirit come down on earth. Not to make leaders to tread on the shoulders of others, but to make willing slaves of everyone. All right, verse 30, behold, two blind men sitting by the wayside. And here's the sad thing, Jesus passed them by. Straight past them. It's awful, isn't it? We're coming now to the judgment hour. We're approaching it. We're coming into it in the next chapter. Judgment hour is coming. The years of blessing are about to pass. And another day is coming. It's going to come in the next chapter. We'll see it. The great open door for Israel is about to close. Here he is, about to enter Jerusalem the last time. Their last opportunity, if you like. He told everybody what would happen there. And there's two blind men, somehow pictures of Israel in themselves, blind. And he passes them by. And they call to him, have mercy on us, O Lord, thou son of David. The multitude rebuked them because they showed their peace. And he said, have mercy on us. And Jesus stood still. In the road, he passed them by, they were behind. He stood still. And in the other Gospels it says, bring them here. Tell them, bring them here. And they were brought, led by the hand, to before Jesus Christ. He stood still in the way. The whole crowd stopped. What will you that I shall do to you? This is the amazing thing. He'd passed them by, their day had gone, and here it is. The cry comes right out, and he stands still. How can you stop God in his tracks? You can do it. You can stop God in his tracks. There he is, moving on. I'm going to do this now. And suddenly, you cry, Lord! God stops what he's doing. Stands absolutely still in his tracks. All right, bring them here. What do you want me to do? Lord, that we may receive our sight. All right. He had compassion on them, touched their eyes, received their sight and followed him. A remnant out of Israel. All right, let's just pray and then we'll have a break.